Chapter 13. Beacon. Cornered Wolf. I made this. He drew in a lungful of hot metallic air. It burned to breathe, but the alternative was worse. His head pounded, and it felt like someone was pressing a steel needle through his left eyeball. His chest hurt, and felt like someone was pressing something considerably larger than a needle through it. "Get up," said a voice. Grail Nocturne nodded, though the gesture sent the needle deeper into his brain. "Get up," repeated Ezekiel Abaddon. Nocturne opened his eyes. Imperial strongpoint. Interior burned and ruined. I did this. There was a drop assault and I killed some Thalax. He didn't think there had been a squad of gloss black Terminators filling the shattered command center. Corpuscant danced over the titanic plates of their dark armor, and Nocturne tasted the ice metal flavor of teleport flare. "The beacon did its job then," he said. "About the only thing you managed to get right," said Abaddon, directing his warriors with sub-vocal chthonic argo. "The Imperial line's already rolling up now that Justerin are here." Nocturne rolled onto his side, the effort of drawing air into his lungs making him sweat. He pushed himself upright, almost retching with the effort. Upright at last, but unsteady on his feet, Nocturne immediately understood the problem. His heart had been destroyed. The dying woman. The officer. Her pistol had been something more than just a las pistol, something considerably more than just a las pistol. He looked down and saw the neat cauterized hole burn through his plastron and into his chest. He knew if he picked up the rebar that had been jammed in his leg, he'd be able to thread it through the hole in his chest and out through his back without effort. "She shot me," he said. "The bitch shot me." "From what I hear, you let her," said the first captain, shaking his head. "Stupid. I'm behind schedule, and now Kyber will likely roll up his flank first." Nocturne sought the dying woman, but she was already dead. Her head lay at an unnatural angle to her shoulder because that was about all that was left of her after the impact of mass reactives to the chest. "You got away lightly," he said. Abaddon took hold of Nocturne's shoulder guard and spun him around. The first captain's Terminator armor gave him a head-of-height advantage. Nocturne looked up into eyes that were like those of a wolf on the hunt and whose prey was in danger of slipping away. "Get your men back in the fight," said Abaddon, "or I'll finish where she started."
"Yes, first captain," said Nocturne.
The knights bore down on the War Master, and Raven had never felt so sure, so righteous in the anticipation of a kill. His arms burned hot with the readiness of his stubber cannons and the crackling energy arcs of his whip. The warriors who'd ridden to glory, before Banalash was his, screamed at him, crowding his senses with their echoing war shouts. He heard their voices, a chorus of wordless fury. None of them had ever claimed so grand a kill, and they all wanted to feel what Raven felt. He channeled their skill and power, used it. Banalash was the tip of the wedge, the lance thrust aimed at the War Master's heart. Ijelic and Bannon held tight to his flanks, heads lowered, ion shields held out over their hearts. Reaper chain blades pulled back to strike. He loosed a wild laugh. He was Imperial Commander. The first kill was his to make, and what a kill it would be! Warriors whose armor looked to be on fire surrounded Horus, but the strangeness of the sight gave Raven no pause. His sensorium told him more warriors were en route to rescue their leader. They would be too late. He clenched his fist, and a blazing stream of high-energy lasers pumped from his shoulder mount. Four of the black warriors were all but incinerated. The Land Raider was sawn in half. Horus rose to his feet, and even though he went helmed, Raven could imagine the fear in his eyes. Banalash cracked its whip, and the War Master was catapulted into the wrecked Land Raider. Purple arcs of lightning flared from his shoulder and chest as he struggled to rise. The floating crosshairs of Raven's gunsight centered on the amber eye at the War Master's chest. "Got you," said Raven, as he unleashed the furious power of the weapon he'd saved just for this moment. His thermal lance. Blitzing spears of sun-hot light enveloped Lupercal, but when Axemand blinked away the pinwheeling after-images, he saw only darkness around his lord and master. The Lupakai clung to the War Master like devotees beseeching an ascending god to stay. They howled, and Axemen felt the day's heat snatched away. Time slowed. Not the way it sometimes did in the heat of battle, not like that at all. In fact, it didn't slow, so much as stop. The world possessed the quality of timelessness, as though time never had, never would, and never could exist here. Galaxies might swirl into being and spin themselves to extinction, and it would be the blink of an eye. A blowfly would beat its wings, and it would take an eternity to complete the motion. It bled from the black warriors surrounding the War Master, as though they drew from some unfathomable well within them. Or maybe some dreadful power reached through them and allowed a measure of its world to seep into this one. The bolts of killing power from the knight's armaments passed into the Lupakai and vanished, swallowed whole as though the twin flames had become dark windows to another realm of existence. And then it was over, and Axeman stumbled as the flow of time caught up to him and the world snapped back into focus. He steadied himself on his shield, his heart straining as though pinned in a suit of skin too small for him. What? It was all he managed before the Lupakai broke their embrace with the War Master. Rivulets of black fire clung to Lupakai's armor, but he was alive. The knight leading the charge paused, stupefied that its target wasn't dead. Its weapons lifted to rectify that upset, but the fractional pause had already cost it its one advantage, and a fraction was all that Horus needed. I should be dead. Nerve endings on fire, pain like he'd never known. Even the attack on the Dome of Revivification hadn't been as bad. Burns and physical trauma he could endure, but the barbed fires of the knight's whip sawed at his nerves like gleeful torturers. I should be dead. No time to reflect that he wasn't. Deal with the pain, force it down into the pit. Endure it later. Mal and Targost's Lupakai had saved him. No time to wonder how. Retreat was not an option. He had been hurt and needed to hurt back. Axemand and the Fifth Company were en route. This would be over before they reached him. Horus looked up at the charging knights. I am alive, and that was your only chance. The Lupakai streamed from him, a flock of raptors loosed from the rookeries of his armor. Far faster than anything living ought to move. Where they had clung to him was marked by burns, frost burns. Horus followed them, swinging Worldbreaker around his head. The first knight took a backward step, and Horus laughed. Afraid now, he bellowed. Screaming vox chatter filled his helmet. He tore it off and threw it away. Lupakai swarmed the legs of the knight, climbing and vaulting, hand over hand, gripping the lips of segmented plates. They tore as they climbed, snapping connector cables, ripping out servos and coupling rods. Ger-Garadon climbed fastest and punched a clawed fist into the pilot's compartment. The knight's whip snapped, flagellating itself to shake him loose. More knights advanced, flanking their leader. Get close, get inside their reach. Chugging cannons thundered, muzzle flare churning the ground to powder. Solid rounds chased Horus, but he put the first knight between him and its fire. Stubber shells ripped across the lead knight's carapace and thermal lance mount. The weapon exploded. Another knight body slammed the first, crushing two more of the Lupakai, who howled as they died. It rammed its iron shield into its leader's carapace, sending the last of them hurtling through the air. Glass and lubricant drizzled like tears. The revealed pilot was a darkly handsome man with a cruel smile. Horus laughed. You still think you can kill me? He dived as the knight's foot stomped down. Horus rolled to his feet and ripped his taloned gauntlet through a knot of pneumatics at the knight's ankle joint. It staggered, gyroscopic servos screaming as they fought to keep the war machine upright. A third and a fourth knight were moving into firing positions. More jostled for position behind them. Keep moving. Don't let them pin you in place. Horus was the lone wolf among the fold, weaving between the legs of his attackers. But the creatures of this fold could crush him, burn him, and gut him. Stamping feet pounded the ground flat. Roaring chain blades wider than a javelin speeder stabbed around him. The energy whip of the lead knight cracked and fused a 3-meter trench of glass in the sand. Horus scrambled onto the claw mechanism of a knight's splayed foot. He gripped the ribbed cabling at its ankle and bent its legs. From a crouch, he leapt as high as he could. Worldbreaker swung, and a knee joint exploded. The knight's leg buckled, and it took a drunken step, every stabilization system powerless to keep it upright. The knight crashed down, its armor crumpling, the carapace split open. Flames engulfed the downed machine, as the power cells of its weapon mount exploded. Horus saw the pilot screaming inside the canopy as he burned to death. Another knight went down, its upper torso detonating in a cherry-red fireball. Horus felt a wash of heat that had nothing to do with its destruction. A squadron of three glaives roared over the black beach, their insanely powerful Volkite carronades rippling in a haze of recent discharge. The huge tanks were Fellblade variants, ruinously demanding of resources and expertise to produce. Only with great reluctance had Mars approved the implementation of a Legion tank bearing such a weapon. The Lunar Wolves had been among the first legions to receive the glaives, a further sign of the Emperor's favor. More tanks appeared behind them, super-heavies all. Two squadrons of Shadow Swords and the cousins of the glaive, the Fellblades themselves. Searing beams, stabbed from volcano cannons and accelerator turrets, crashed back with armor-piercing shells. The noise was deafening. Echoing booms were thrown back from the cliffs. Three knights were all but obliterated, a pair of molten legs and a pair of weapon mounts all that remained. A fourth threw its iron shield up just quick enough to deflect the full force of a high-density shell that nevertheless ripped its entire arm and most of its shoulder away. The knights were monstrously outgunned, and they knew it. The hunting horn of the lead knight loosed an ululating blast, and they fled back the way they had come. Humbled and broken, they left half their number dead and ruined. Horus drew in a breath of physoline-scented air, letting the exertion and stress of the fight drain from him. Oily sweat ran down his ruddy face and pooled in blood-caked grooves in his armor. His body was running hot to re-knit his flesh. Keeping a body at such a high pitch was exhausting, even for a Primarch. He heard the clatter of armor as warriors formed up around him, shields rammed into the sand in a makeshift defensive work. He already knew there was no need. The battle was already won. A trailing Voxbead dangling from his gorget after he'd thrown away his helmet told him as much. Noctua's decapitation strike had broken the center and most likely killed the senior enemy officer. Teleporting Justerin and the Catulan Reavers were clearing the trenches with Ezekiel and Kyber showing no mercy. With the defense line's abandonment, thousands of armored vehicles moved up the bloody beach. Land Raiders, Fellblades, Rhinos, Cicerons, and finally the Chimeras of Lithonan's auxiliaries. Predators of all types followed them, together with recovery tractors, scout tanks, and Trojan resupply vehicles. Apothecarian troops swarmed the battlefield, gathering the wounded as the smoke of bombardment was blown out to sea. Fires burned from the multitude of wrecks littering the coastline. "A heavy cost," said Horus, as Aximand approached and drove his shield into the sand. He coughed, and there was blood in his mouth. "Sir," said Aximand. "Sir, are you hurt?" Horus shook his head before realizing that, yes, he was hurt, badly hurt. He reached out and steadied himself on Aximand. The last time he had been surrounded by his warriors and almost fallen, it had ended badly for everyone. "I'm fine, little Horus." They both knew it was a lie, but agreed upon it anyway. "Taking on 10 knights, said Aximand. "Really?" "I killed one and the rest fled at the sight of me." "More like the sight of the glaives and shadow swords," said Aximand. "Careful," said Horus, increasing the pressure on Aximand's armor fraction. "If I was being ungenerous, I might think you were belittling this victory." Aximand nodded, heeding Lupercal's warning, and said, "You're sure you're fine?" "I'm better than fine," said Horus. "I won." The black sand of Avedon's coastline had reminded Grail Noctua of Istvan V, but the Promethean fires lining the roadway from the beach and the reviewing stand built at its edge was pure Ulanor. Night had fallen, but the sky was still cut by phosphor-bright trails of wreckage coming down from orbit. Storm eagles and fire raptors circled overhead like hunting birds eager to be loosed once more. Perched on a narrow peninsula, Avedon was swathed in darkness, with only the moon's reflected radiance in the ocean to limn its hard edges. The lights of the city's Hab Towers, Legion Monuments, and Commercia were all extinguished, its thousands of inhabitants clinging to the dark and hoping the Legion would pass them by. An army of conquest had landed on Damasek, and it was forming up around Avedon, preparing to advance south across the continent's agricultural heartland towards Lupercalia. Seeker and reconnaissance squads were already in the wind, and intelligence on the disposition of Molech's hundreds of thousands of soldiers was flooding back to Legion command. The Mournival accompanied the Warmaster as he marched between ranked-up companies of the Legion. Hasty repairs made him magnificent again, though none were battle-worthy. He walked with a slight limp, imperceptible to most eyes, but to Noctua's calculating gaze, it was blindingly obvious. The reviewing stand was just ahead, built from the ruins of the defensive line's demolished strongholds. Six Deathbringer warlords towered behind it, four in the graphite and gold of Legio Volcanum, two in Vulpa's rust and bone. Moonlight reflected from the heavy plates of their armour. Weapon mounts vented exhaust gases like hot animal breath. 26 Titanicus engines had landed at Damasek, 11 from Volcanum, 6 from Interfecta, 4 from Vulpa, and 5 from Mortis, the largest concentration of Titans that Noctua had seen since Istvan III. The 10 Reavers stood like vast monuments in Avedon's outer manufactorum districts, while 6 Warhounds stalked the edges of the muster fields like wary guard dogs. "Reminds me of the Triumph," said Ezekiel approvingly. "That's the idea," replied Lupercal. "Aren't triumphs usually held after a campaign?" asked Noctua, and the first captain shot him an angry look. The delay his wounding at the hands of a mortal had caused Ezekiel was something the first captain wasn't going to forget in a hurry. "Unless you're one of the Phoenicians' rabble," said Kyber. "It's symbolic, Grail," said Horus. "When we left Ulanor, it was as the Emperor's servants. When we leave Molech, we will be our own masters." Something in the War Master's tone told Noctua that it wasn't the whole truth, but a warning glance from Aximand advised against pursuing the matter. He nodded and hid a grimace of pain, as it felt like someone was plunging an ice-cold blade into his chest. "Grail," said Horus, pausing and giving him a sidelong glance. "It's nothing," he said. "My own fault."
"No argument there," grunted Ezekiel.
Horus nodded, and they resumed their march. The apothecary who treated Noctua at battle's end had all but demanded he remove himself from the order of battle and submit to heart implantation surgery. Noctua had refused all but the most basic attention. He forced himself to keep up, feeling the cold blade of pain twist deeper into the empty cavity within his chest. Feeling another's eyes upon him, Noctua turned his gaze from the Warmaster to the warriors lining his path. Ger Garadon grinned at Noctua in a way that made him want to put a fist through his face. Fully helmed Lupercai with static-filled eyes surrounded Garadon, many more than Noctua had seen during the assault on Var Crixia. How far had Malakirst and Targost gone in seeking volunteers to become hosts for these flesh-eating warp killers? Garadon looked over his shoulder and raised his eyebrows. "You will be one with us soon," the look said. "Never born. Unburdened." "Did you know you and this city share a name, Ezekiel?" said the War Master as they approached the reviewing stand. Noctua turned from Ger Garadon and tried to shake the thought that he was looking at his future. "We do?" asked the first captain. "Abaddon, I mean. Ezekiel was said to be an ancient prophet, though it seems he might simply have been a witness to old Earth's first encounters with xenoforms. I found several mentions of an Abaddon," he said, "or Apollyon, or Avedon, depending on whether you're reading the Septuagint or the Hexapla. Or was it the Vulgate? So many versions and none of them can agree."
"So who was Abaddon?" asked Kyber. "Or don't we want to know?"
Horus paused at the foot of the steps to the reviewing stand. "He was an angel, Falcus," said Horus. "But don't let the term mislead you. Back then, angels were soaked in blood, the right hand of a vengeful god who sent them into the world of men to lay waste and kill in his name.
Sounds just like you, said Axamund, and they all laughed.
Horus ascended to the stand, but the Mournival didn't follow. This was their place, invisible in the wings, while Lupercal basked in adulation. Noctua took a moment to look out over the assembled legionaries. The War Master's sons stretched as far as the eye could see. At least 60,000 space marines. By conventional reckonings of numbers, it was a paltry force with which to conquer a world. But this was the 16th Legion, the Sons of Horus, and this was more than enough. It was practically overkill. The War Master took center stage, Worldbreaker and his Talon raised high. The Deathbringer Warlord Titans loosed deafening blasts from their warhorns, and the thousands of legionaries pumped their fists in the air at the sight of Lupercal.
From a world of darkness, I did bind demons and death-doers in the form of wolves.
Horus swept his maul down, and night became day as the Reaver Titans surrounding Avedon opened fire with every one of their weapon systems. They rained down a continuous barrage of lasers, rockets, and plasma until the city and all living things within were consumed in a fiery holocaust. Voxlinx broadcast the War Master's voice through the horns of the Titans, and his pronouncement shook Noctua's bones.
So perish all who stand against me.
Yakton, said Loken, standing at the door to Tarnhelm's crew compartment. Since entering the warp, the Knights Errant spent most of their days gathered around the long table, swapping exploits and expertise. Ares Wojtek was repeating a story of his legion's assault on a nomadic fleet of Xenos and humans. His servo arms described the maneuvers of several starships. The story petered out as they saw Loken.
Gavriel, replied Cruz, if you've come to finish the job, I'll not stop you, lad.
I might, said Broar Tearfinger.
I'm sorry I missed it the first time, sniggered Severian.
Loken shook his head. I'm not here to fight you.
Then what do you want?
To live up to the words I said to carry on Zaven. The former Emperor's Children Legionary looked up at the sound of his name, his attention momentarily diverted from the polishing of a hue-claw blade.
What did you say to him? Asked Cruz.
I told him that we had enough enemies before us without looking for them in our own ranks.
Then why did you almost kill Yakton? Asked Kane.
Shut up, Tubal, said Varan, replacing bladed teeth on his axe that hadn't lost a fraction of their lethal sharpness.
What? Said the former Iron Warrior. It's a valid question.
Not the point, replied Ares Wojtek.
Cruz nodded and swung his legs out from beneath the table to face Loken. Aboard ship, the legionaries went without armour, and Loken saw the corded strength within the half-herd's frame, like tempered steel or seasoned heartwood. He wore a sleeveless body glove and tan fatigues tucked into knee-high black boots. His face bore little trace of Loken's assault, just a slight discoloration of the skin around his right eye.
Good words, said Cruz. Hard to live up to when trust is in such short supply, eh?
For what it's worth, I'm sorry, said Loken, taking a seat at the table. Cruz waved away his apology and poured himself a beaker of water. He poured Loken a drink, which he accepted.
I've been waiting for that beating ever since I found out you were alive, lad.
There's just one thing I don't understand, said Loken.
Just one? Grunted Cruz. Then you've a better grasp of things than me. What is it you don't understand?
If Lord Dawn told you to keep Mercedes' existence secret, why did you tell me about her on the prison fortress? Asked Loken. You could have just boarded Tarnhelm, and I'd have been none the wiser.
Secrets have a way of coming out, said Altan Nohai. In that place, in that time, it was right that Yakton spoke.
Cruz nodded.
I'd gone to Titan with Lord Dawn to kill a man.
Who?
Solomon Voss. You remember him?
Loken nodded. I never met him, but I'd heard the name around the Vengeful Spirit.
A good man. Too good. I think that's why Lupercal kept him around for so long before sending him back to us. Voss had done nothing wrong, but we couldn't let him live. Horus knew that, knew it would weigh heavily on whoever swung the blade. And like Alton says, Secrets have a habit of coming out. The bigger they are, the more likely they'll come out just when you don't want them to.
What does Solomon Voss have to do with Mercedes?
Cruz leaned over the table and rested his arms on the table.
I'm going to be very clear, so there's no misunderstanding, he said. We few are heading back to face the War Master. The chances of us making it back alive are virtually irrelevant. I thought you deserved to know she was still alive before we left.
Loken sat back, his face stony.
Will Lord Dorne kill her, too? I think he considered it. What stopped him? Asked Rubio.
You're the Maleficarum, said Broad Tearfinger. You tell us.
Rubio shot Broad an irritated glance, but Ultramarian virtue kept him from trading insults with the Fenrisian.
Compassion, said Zaven, setting down his sword. Not a virtue I'd expected from a Lord of the Fists, but perhaps he's not as hewn from stone as we all thought.
Cruz said, It pained the Primarch to execute Solomon Voss, more than you know. Another tally to add to Lupercal's butcher's bill, more blood on his hands.
They lapsed into silence until Loken withdrew the presentation case Mercedes had given him. He placed it on the table and slid it across to Cruz. The half-herd recognized it and eyed the case warily.
What's that?
I don't know. Mercedes said I had to give it to you.
Well, open it for throne's sake, said Varon, when Cruz made no move to touch the box. Don't keep us all in bloody suspense.
Cruz flipped open the case and frowned in puzzlement. He lifted out a pressed disc of hardened red wax, affixed to a long strip of yellowed seal paper.
An oath of moment, said Tubal. It's mine, said Cruz.
Of course it's yours, said Broar. Loken just gave you it.
No, I mean it's mine, said Cruz. I made this back in the day. I know my own seal work when I see it.
To what action does it oath you? Asked Tubal Cain.
Cruz shook his head.
No action. It's blank. I made this in the days leading up to the Istvan campaign, but I was never oathed for that fight.
Did you give it to Mercedes? Asked Loken.
No, it was in my arming chamber, said Cruz, turning the seal over in his gnarled hands. Did Mistress Oliton say anything about why I was to have this?
She said to remind you that you were the half-herd no longer, that your voice would be heard louder than any other of the Legion.
What does that mean? Asked Ares Wojtek. Damned if I know, said Cruz. Gavriel, what else did she say?
Loken didn't answer, staring at the suggestion of a hooded shape in the shadows he knew none of the others would see. The figure shook his head slowly.
Nothing, he said. She didn't say anything else.